to Clamp, the weekly podcast where we discuss all things related to creating, living, and making projects. I'm your host, Grant Alexander, and joining me as always is Jesse Ratfink and Adam Mackey. And this week, we have a special guest. Right now, he's best known around the community for his $100 hammers, but he also likes to make mushrooms. You can probably find him hanging out in a random garden in Michigan. That's because he's a gnome. It's Ryan from Gnome Hammer Forge. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so if you'd like, tell all of our listeners who may not know who you are, who you are, and what you do.
Well, like you said, I'm Ryan from Gnome Hammer Forge. I own and operate the business. Do everything myself. So I make hammers primarily. That's mostly what I make. But soon I'll probably be getting into some tool making. But yeah, I don't know where that's going to go, but there's a whole plan for that, I guess. But mostly hammers right now. That's my main passion. That's what I'm obsessed with, is hammers, hammers, hammers.
Yeah, the only blacksmithing hammer, proper hammer I have is a gnome hammer.
Nice.
Which is weird to say, gnome hammer. So we wanted to have you on the podcast because you are right now, not right now, you've been it for a while, but you're very passionate about hammers, and you've taken a hobby into what I would say is a very, seemingly from the outside, successful business. I don't know if it's really successful on the inside, but seemingly successful business. And it seems like you've got a lot of passion for what you're doing. So we wanted to try and talk to you about, you know, how you've utilized that passion and how you've kept it alive throughout this time period.
It's been crazy. Yeah. And honestly, I've only been doing it for 3 years. So the amount of traction I've got in the past 3 years is pretty insane. And it's really all just due to, like, I'm insanely driven to do big things. So with my forge. So, and I want to open like a school kind of setting eventually. But I got to find the right location for that. I was going to do it in my new shop, but now I just want to fully outfit my new shop straight up for production work. So then I have another location in mind. It's right in my hometown. But as far as I know, the guy's kind of a cranky old man who doesn't really want to do anything with the building. He just wants it to let it rot. So and it's like this old car lot / auto mechanic shop. So it was like, it'd be a perfect setting to turn the showroom into like a classroom setting and then have the shop area. It would be awesome.
A old car lot / mechanic shop is my literal dream shop. And there's a guy, Rich Lowen Designs, in town, and he's like a 5-minute drive from me. And that's what he is. That's what he's done. He took a 4-bay shop and now it's his maker space, which is pretty sweet to say. And it's like, because it was like a full operating mechanic shop, like it's like 4 bays is just the start. Then there's like a warehouse out back and there's a second floor and he's got a 3D print farm and he's got like, he basically has everything except for a forge. He has, for some reason, no desire to forge anything. And I find it really like weird to me, but.
That's crazy. Like the whole 3D print farms, I think, are crazy in themselves. Like I watch those on Instagram a little bit. Like I'll sit and watch just 3D print farms. I'm like, man, this stuff's insane. And the speed they can do is crazy. Like the one I have, my son took it over, but because it's so slow, I'm like, oh my God. Like I look at the ones on, I watch videos and I'm like, man, mine is slow. I hate it so much. So now my son just uses it because I don't ever use it.
See, I have
so much lately, so much. Like the bamboo ones are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I my biggest, like I have a fear of starting a big long print. I've never been able to restart a print if I lose power or something. But it's also like as soon as you go like, okay, 12-hour print, go, 500 ideas come into your head. of other 5 minute projects that you need to get. I need it now, right? No. And my printer will sit empty for months. But that we're not here to talk about 3D printing, although it's just fun and cool. And like, so he, I, just to end it all, he does do lost printing casting. So he does casting where like he uses some special filament that you can like make your own. Anyways, pretty cool. So, hey, that's one of the many things he does.
If quickly before you do move away from 3D printing and the whole power thing, I'm actually looking, I'm going to buy probably tomorrow. It's called a UPS.
Uninterruptible power supply.
Yeah. So I'm going to get one of those tomorrow because my power has gone out a couple of times mid print and it's really fucking annoying because you can't resume the print. So I need to get one of those that will just kick in and keep the printer going for a bit. And I found heaps of people online that have like hacked them to have a car battery connected to them. So they'll actually last for like 12 hours with a 3D printer.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into the topic, we like to do a thing called What's in Your Clamps. And that's where we talk about the thing or things that you've been working on this week. And because we've recently switched up the format, I forgot to do it. So I'm going to slide back a little bit and go jump into it, and I'll talk about what I was working on this week. And I got the first project of 2024 done. So we're recording on January 3rd. I had a project done on January 1st. And my resolution, for lack of a better word, was to finish more projects than I start. And therefore, I'm currently up one because I didn't even start it that year. I technically started it in 2023. Finished in 2024, so I'm up one, which means I can start one project without going into the hole. So that's good for me. It's it was just like a simple toy shelf for those who are interested. Just like 8 feet of toy storage, 4 shelves high. So
yeah, it turned out.
Jesse, thank you. What have you been working on, Jesse?
So I am still making my way through the Fusion 360 course from I Like to Make Stuff. So I retook the whole thing. I started from the beginning again. It's been too long. And then when I got to step 4, I started having all sorts of bugs. And like my placement was not matching anything happening. So I got a little stuck. And because all of that, I did not learn Section 4 very well. So I'm going to have to go back and do Section 4 again, I think, before I go to Section 5. So it's happening. I'm just like really bad at 3D design and the computer's not helping me. So, yeah.
And one of the frustrating parts is that unless they're constantly updating the training, there are little things that change. And or you just have a different view set up because somehow you click something wrong and it looks a slightly different and you can't do the thing they're trying to do. It's the most frustrating part about online learning. But yeah, so good luck. I know that one of the first things I did is I tried to make my screen look like their screen.
Yeah, well, and I've done all of that. But now it's just like it could be user error for all I know. Like I just have to get like the basics down of putting a sketch into my components, because right now I'm just nothing makes sense. So I'm just really bad at this. Is really all it comes down to.
Fair.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, what have you been working on?
So I have designed a switch which has kind of gone both ways on my reel. So I've made 2 reels. The first one blew up quite a bit, like on my standards. It's at 700 views, which is a lot for me. But essentially, when the door opens, the two things connect, the two prongs connect with each other, which then turns a light on. And some people are concerned about like there's just two prongs of live electricity coming out of it. So I've redesigned it to the opposite. So the prongs are on the non-live side and then the rest of it's like it's hidden. So you wouldn't accidentally bump into it. So that's currently printing behind me. Yes.
If you want a even next step of making it safer is have it so it turns on a relay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. I was thinking that. So like the actual connection, so that it wouldn't actually be like full power live at all times, only a switch. Yeah. I was thinking that. So that'll probably be the next reiteration. I'm just going to keep going through until I find something that I'm happy with. But I've changed up a couple of things in the new design, so actually, like, the pits will actually go into a hole rather than just touch, like, outside. So there'll be no, when it's actually open or, like, connected, there'll actually be no exposed metal at all.
Yeah. So the other thing, another random, use a magnetic switch so that when it's together, the two pieces are, it closes the switch, and when the grinder falls apart. Yeah.
It's a great idea, actually. Yeah, because I did have Jeff message me, and he said, hey, the only thing that I'm worried about is that if it's not a good enough connection, like, it might spark. And I said, well, if you actually look, the way I've designed it is the thing on the roof is just bendy enough where, like, it's forward a bit, so the door actually pushes it back, putting pressure on the two metal bits together.
Right.
But if I do have issues, I could always go down the magnet route.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the other thing I'm doing is I've got a bike rack for mine and the kids' bikes, which is just constantly in the way. So I'm going to make it, I'm going to add, like, an extension for the back wheels and then put it all on wheels so I can move it out of the way when I need to.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the bicycles being in the way is a never-ending struggle.
No.
Which I guess you're dealing with now, and I don't have to deal with now because it's...
Well, I deal with it 24... I deal with it 365 days a year. We don't get snow.
Yeah.
Well, what about at least I don't have to snow my snowblower.
Right. Ryan, do you got any snow right now, Ryan?
No. Nope.
No, me either.
No, it's crazy, actually. It's kind of insane. It's like, wow, how is it January and I've got no snow?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've seen January with no snow in quite some time.
I can't remember a time in my life.
I don't either.
My brother works he's an estimator for a building company, and all of their insurance is shot through the roof because apparently this year is like some freak thing that happens every 40 years with like a massive like heat wave thing. So we're all in for like a massively hot summer.
Mm. Yay. Yeah. Well, Ryan, what have you been working on this week? Let's talk about something.
Hammers all the time, baby. I think I've made 12 since the start of the year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, make a lot.
How many hammers did you make last year?
I don't know. I don't count. So
what?
Nah, I don't see the point. I see the point in counting. I'm going to make so many hammers in my lifetime. Why do I need to count?
I don't know. I think it's a fun number.
Nah.
They're not, individually stamped with what number they are?
Dude, I respect them for even doing that. Like, that takes so much time in itself. Like, I don't have time to take the time to do that.
Yeah. I mean, if you've done 12 in 3 days, then that's just so much extra work you don't need to do.
Yeah, honestly, that's money. I'm in the, like, do you see East Wing numbering their hammers? Or East Wing, however you want to say it? Nah, they don't number shit. They just make them, baby. That's all I do. I just make them.
A special line of numbered hammers after this conversation. People, if you want a numbered hammer from Ryan, they're $500 a piece. And they'll be
not happening. I still wouldn't do it.
There'll be a regular hammer, and he just puts a number on it for an extra.
A random number. It's not even in order.
Yeah. That's Austin from High Caliber Camp, he made us all the Hexacto knives, and he offered anyone who wanted to get them numbers, like have it numbered, and then people started requesting numbers, so then he just said, everyone's just getting random numbers, right? Because like, people are like, well, I want like 13, so can I wait? And then someone else is like, I want 69, because...
69.
And then someone's like, I want 420. Anyways. So you're passionate about a lot of stuff, mainly hammers and making hammers, and apparently switching out presses constantly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's in my constant pursuit to be faster at what I do. That's more, it has nothing to do with the press itself. It's more.
I get that. That's all part of it.
Yep.
Right. That's all part of being driven, though, I think, is recognizing when it's appropriate to invest in yourself, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
That's all part of it. Because, like, obviously, you can make hammers with one other hammer, right?
Yeah.
Like, with a rock. Yeah. You can make hammers with rocks. So, you know, you could
technically, yes. Theoretically. That's the
first hammer. First hammer had to be made that way, right?
Yeah.
But you just want to keep making them better and better and faster and faster. But what has done this? What has given you this drive? So like you said, in 2021, you started with a little like Harbor Freight cart forge.
Oh yeah. Well, no, yeah. I had a gas forge to start.
Okay.
That little cart forge I did make, that was my forge right after I built it, because the gas forge was not good whatsoever. It was right. Like a very cheap Amazon gas forge. So it was not good.
Yeah.
So I built this gold forge and and it sparked. Yeah. It just sparked. Really, it was making my first hammer when I made, because I was like, hit some steel basically. And I found out real quick that I was making a lot of ugly hammer marks. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to make a hammer. And then I found out, well, I need like tools and stuff. So I was like, all right, I'm going to make one soft hammer so that I can make the other hammers. And making that first soft hammer, that's what did it for me. Ever since then, I was just in love with it. And I was like, okay, I need to figure out how I can do this faster, how I can make more, because I don't feel, me personally, I don't like charging a lot for a hammer, because I have good steel prices and whatnot. And I would rather make a ton of hammers than charge a lot and only make a handful of hammers a year. Like I want to make,
right.
I want hammers everywhere. I want gnome hammers all over the place. I want gnome hammers to be like a household name. So I'm not stopping at just making a few like I'm making thousands of hammers a year. At my right. peak, like I don't want to drop forge though. So I just want to go as far as I can go with still being in control basically of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I'm sure you've seen the videos of like the, I think it's, I don't know. It's like Grant Forged Axe or Grant. Anyways, there's an axe company and they have like, they're forged. And there's a billet, mm-hmm. and they stick it in the machine, and the machine's just going chunk, chunk.
Oh, yeah, you're talking chunk, Warwood yeah. tool. Yeah,
they yeah, do. Maybe that's what it is.
That's drop forging. That's when it's a drop hammer, and it's just basically it's a closed die system. So they're just sticking the hunk in, and the whole shape is already imprinted into the die, so it's just cutting it right. out. That's what I right. want to avoid. I want to go as far as I can without doing that. So like how Hoffman axes. He's doing all forging. Like, he's forging these axes out. He punches the eye. He drifts. He draws his cheeks out. He forges the bits and everything. Like, he's doing all 100% forging. He has big equipment, so he does it very fast. Like, he can forge an axe in one heat. So, you know, he's doing it quick.
Yeah.
And that's where I want to be.
How long does it take you to make a hammer?
Three heats-ish. Depends on the style. Depends on the size and weight. It takes me, so no matter how many, it really is how many I can comfortably fit in the forge. So I can make like five in an hour and a half includes heat time and everything. Wow, actual forging, it probably only takes like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
All the rest
is your
damn billet.
You're heating others while you're working on the one that you're working on.
Yeah, I get it to where I'm never stopping, to where I'm constantly. Yeah. So by the time I'm done with the fifth one, the first one's heated up and ready for the next step.
Yeah, right. Wow.
And it leaves me about just enough time to swap my dies. And then I'm pumping on the next ones.
Someone that has no experience with like metalworking or forging or anything, I just assumed a hammer would take like 8 to 10 hours.
No.
One no. hammer.
Not to, I, no, nope. Takes me like I think okay. a minute to shape a handle, and then
so that you have some in like pretty big tools, not the average tool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're hand making a hammer, yes, you're probably going to spend a healthy amount of time on that hammer. But I mean, I know guys that do it by hand and they're like, this is the only thing they do, and they make them by hand. And I'm like, you guys are crazy. I don't know how you make a living. But they're also charging, you know, $300 to $400 for a hammer.
Right. So, okay. So I guess I'll go ahead and bring it back. What, like, if you were talking to someone else who was like getting interested in something and you saw that little spark in their eye of passion that they might want to try and like wrestle with, which I think a lot of makers out there want to take that spark and ignite it on something, whatever it is, whether it be forging hammers or, you know, embroidery or whatever it is that they happen to be passionate about at the time. What kind of advice would you give them to kind of, one, not get burnt out about it? Because if you're making, you know, 1,000 hammers, you might go at the end of it, go, ooh, I might be making a lot of hammers. Like, there might be a little bit of something. I know, maybe not you, but what would you give to them to make sure that that doesn't happen?
Well, honestly, you really have to. It takes a certain type of person to do this type of work. Like, to do production, it takes a real certain, like, you have to be kind of insane, obsessive about it, because otherwise it's just, you are going to get burnt out. Like, I don't get burnt out because I wake up thinking about it. I go to sleep thinking about it. Like, that's all I think about is making hammers. So, and how I can progress my business. Like, how can I make my 5-year steps in 2 years and stuff like that? Like, I'm constantly. So I think it takes that kind of person, and it takes a lot of time. Like, I wake up at 4 a.m. to get to work because I have a family. So I have to work around their schedule, which thankfully my second job, I'm down to 1 day a week, so I have a lot more time in my forge now. But still, I still have to work around the family schedule. So I wake up at 4 so I can work hard. Like, I work 6 hours before anyone even wakes up. So,
right. So, okay, go through a regular day so people can understand kind of what it's like to kind of have this growth that you've had and really foster all of this in a way that allows you to kind of take it to the next level. Cause I think there's a lot of people, I think, out there that want to take it to the next level that don't realize, you know, you got to eat, sleep, and breathe whatever you want to do. If you want to become, like, even the people doing the $500 hammers, it doesn't matter if you're doing, you know, one hammer a week or, you know, 100 hammers a week, you're still doing every day. You're working it, right? You're working for it, as some might say.
Yeah, for real. Gotta get after it, man. You gotta get after it for real.
So what's your schedule? What is it, and has it changed over time, maybe?
It's not really, man. I've had the same schedule for about a year and a half to 2 years now. I wake up at 4, make coffee, try to get out to the forge by 5 at the latest, like into the forge, which is like 10 steps away from my door. So it's it's like a detached garage right now. And then my new shop's on the other side of the house. So it's still the same amount of distance. So I'll wake up at 4, make coffee, get out there, start up the forge, throw billets in. And usually while those are heating up, I'm either programming the press or I'll grind handles. I'm always doing something. Like, I'm getting stuff prepped for the next step for when they're done forging. And then once the billets are heated up, I spend about an hour and a half forging those. And usually by the time I'm done with those, I got to get the kids up and ready for school and make breakfast, all that stuff, get them on the bus. And then it's back in the forge to grind. I'll grind for that. I don't know. It probably only takes me about an hour to 2 hours for grinding, depending on how many hammers I'm doing. And then it's all finishing work. And then at the same time of all this, I'm always filming. I'm filming pretty much everything. And then I also edit in between heats. Like, I'll edit and post a video before 6 o'clock. I try to make a point of getting before 6 o'clock. It really depends on what I'm doing that morning, though, too. If I'm doing a lot of, like, I don't know, sometimes I'm doing, like, cleaning stuff and stuff that's not really that interesting, so I don't have anything to film. But most of the time I have something to film, so I'll film and put something up by 6. I try to get 3 a day, but lately I've just been so busy, it's hard to film and edit and also do all the work in the same day. So, because right. I do everything, say, I don't like make a day for editing and making videos and stuff and then schedule out a week in advance. I just am doing stuff on the go because that it works better for me that way. I can't take a full day. I can't imagine taking a full day of sitting and doing videos instead of working. Like I'm so driven to forge, like that's my passion. So videos is kind of just the side thing that helps me promote what I love doing. Right. So, but I would like to get a nicer camera though. Cause honestly, doing it all from my phone is getting a little old. Like it's getting, my phone's constantly full. I have to delete stuff all the time. And like, I'll delete my raw footage right after I'm done editing, just cause I need space.
It's a very frustrating thing as a content creator. I've got problems. And then
like, I'd rather have.
On top of that, my Google account only has 15 gigs. So it's like the backup account and it's full like every other week. It auto backs up. It's crazy.
I have 200 gig backup and I still can't keep the shit empty.
it doesn't matter. That's the thing I was looking at. I was like, the amount that I film on the phone, you get to a point where you just go, it doesn't matter if I have 15 gigs or 200 gigs, you're going to be at the limit and then you're still going to be deleting. So why would I pay any extra? 15's free. It just
That's what I've come to realize. I'm like, man, why am I even paying this extra? It's constantly full either way, and I'm not using anything old, so it's just loading up a bunch of stuff that I don't need. And then my wife, and then you know, want to take videos or something of the kids, and you can't because your phone's full. sorry, I got to delete videos real quick. Hold on.
There's nothing worse than going through your phone and going, like sometimes you got to delete a video of your kid. Cause like you just didn't capture anything of like value.
It's not important,
right? No, like sometimes like you're filming your kid for like, you know, like 10 minutes doing something, and you're like, okay, so I got like I don't need to watch all 10 minutes of that again. Like
there were 6 minutes waiting for them to do something.
Oh my god, yeah, they're like, can you film me? And you're like, okay, and then they like spend 6 minutes setting up whatever they want to film. Yeah, done that, been there.
Yeah,
I am very anal when I'm recording of like, if something hasn't happened of a certain amount of time, like it's not no like certain time, but it just pops into my head. I just click stop record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then I can just delete that one that had nothing on it.
Yep.
I'm the same way.
So I've missed my son's stuff so many times doing that. And then he's like, so can I see the video? And I'm like, phone didn't work.
Oh, I must have. I recorded myself. Darn it. I had the wrong camera.
So, based on where we're going, their schedule, you're at like noon now. You're out there finished. You've done some grinding. It sounds like you got the kids to school. You're doing some grinding. Yep. It's like noon. Yeah. Did you take a lunch break?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. I'd say, like, I eat so fast, though. So it's like, what's the point? I don't know if I can consider it a break. Like, because I'm like, it takes longer to make my food than eat it. Like, I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna make some like chicken tenders or something, throw them in the oven, takes 20 minutes to make them, takes me 2 minutes to eat them. Piping hot. And I'm just like, I gotta get back to work. So,
my wife gets so annoyed. She tells me that I eat like someone's about to steal my food.
Oh, yeah, dude. I eat like I'm in prison and I don't like, I'm just scrapping it down. But yeah, I'll take a lunch break usually after grinding and then, a heat treat. I'll do all my quenching and whatnot. And then, they get tempered then thrown in the tumbler. And then really it's finished polishing and hanging them and that's it. Then they're good.
So that's it.
And then oiling them up.
and what time do you stop? So you're starting at 4 or 5 o'clock?
Usually I'm 4 to 4.
Okay.
Like when the kids get home from school, that's usually when I stop.
And you just, you don't go back out in the forge all night?
Nope. Nope. Because then that's family time. That's why I wake up so early, so that I can have family time when everyone's actually home.
That is, I think...
It's a commitment.
Yeah. But no, I think that's something that's like a big tip for people.
Yes. Yeah, dude.
The family time.
You found the hack.
Well, my wife wouldn't say so, but she still would say I work too much, but... You know, she understands that I am very ambitious and I have a goal that needs to be met. Otherwise, I will not be satisfied.
Right. And I think so with like, I know with myself, I am constantly battling all the commitments that I have with the stuff I want to make in the garage. Right. Mm. And I'll get something like stuck in my head. I just need to go out to the garage and do that thing. Right.
Yep.
And, but it's family time. And I feel like if I go in the garage during family time, I'm missing out on time that I'm never going to get that back. And whatever's in the garage is going to sit there. But my kids, they're going to grow up. And there's going to be a time where they don't want to hang out with me. And they're not going to be saying, come play Legos with me. Right? Yeah. So I feel like such guilt. I don't want to be the dad who was never there. Right, like you hear these stories, like oh, there's a super successful, you know, parents who never saw their kids.
Yeah,
right. So yeah. I do think that you've got something there, and I think that actually helps a lot with keeping it alive because you're not killing yourself over it. You're not wrecking your family ties over it. You know, you're not. Yeah. You know, you're seeing your kids and your wife. Maybe your wife thinks that she'd like to see a little more, but
yeah.
I really feel like that's a big thing that I didn't realize because so many people, I see them because they're doing it as a side hustle.
Mm.
They're doing it in the evenings and weekends.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. They're doing it when that's how I started was I had to figure out that. And that's why I started waking up at 4 a.m. because I was like, I got to figure out a time that I can have uninterrupted shop time, otherwise I'll never get to where I want to be. So I chose to just wake up before everybody, and it took me, it took me like a month to get used to, but I mean, it was a rough month of groggy ass mornings, but yeah, once you get used to it, you get used to it. And now I've been doing it I'll probably never stop doing it because it's just embedded now. And I have like pretty bad OCD, so once I have a routine, I stick with it. So that's why, that's another reason I think I've been successful is my routine is very important to my mental health. So I'm like, if I'm not doing it, then I'm not in a good place. So I'm constantly on the same schedule. So I'm always progressing.
So if you want to be successful, get OCD.
It doesn't hurt.
How close is your closest neighbor if you're going out to the shop at 4 a.m.?
I live in the woods, so they're not close. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
you're making me think.
I realize there's a lot of people that do have that limitation too. Like they have neighbors and I also have a presses. They're not loud. So they're pretty quiet in comparison to.
Well, like, I live in a duplex and my neighbor's teen daughter is literally on the other side of that brick wall right there is her bedroom.
Okay.
She lives in their garage. Like, if I'm out here in the middle of the night, I can literally hear her watching TV. Well,
that's tough.
Yeah. So I know for a while when I was producing a lot more stuff and content, my time that I had picked was after the kids went to bed. And at that time, it was only one kid. And I was doing that for a long time and it was really successful until I kind of burnt out, probably is not the right word, but I just kind of like, I didn't feel like I was getting the traction that the amount of effort I was putting in, you know, so you feel like, you know, if you weren't selling hammers, you probably wouldn't keep making them. Like maybe you would, but if they were just all sitting around, you just started having 1,000 hammers in your shop and you're
why do you think I would throw $50 hammer sales, man? Like, I used to do them fire sales because I was like, I'm not going to stop making them, so I got to get rid of them because otherwise I'm going to have hundreds of hammers sitting around here. Like,
right.
Because I'm Yeah, because, I mean, the only way I'm going to get better is making hundreds and thousands of hammers. That's the only way I'm going to get better is to keep doing it. So I wasn't going to stop. So, yeah, I would have, like, 20 hammers laying around, and I'd be like, all right, I got to sell some of these, like, dirt cheap just so they can get the hell out of my shop, because otherwise I don't need 20 of the same hammer. So,
right. Well, and I think that's a really good tip for people, because a lot of times people sit on inventory, and it's regardless of what it is, you get better. So then your old stuff, you're like the hammer that you sold to me, you probably would look at it and go, I make better hammers.
I hate every hammer that someone shows me. I hate every hammer that's not the newest hammer I made.
Right.
That's not true, but but yeah, I have a hard time looking at some of the early ones. I'm like, oh god, like I'll get those memory posts of like pictures on my phone of really old hammers, and I'm like, ugh, what was I thinking?
The thought that you just said you plan to make thousands of hammers yourself is insanity to me. Like, yeah, I could not imagine making thousands of one thing in my own little shop in a lifetime. That's crazy. Like, that's
it's more fun when you're forging's fun, man. It's not like sitting on an assembly line or, you know, doing a punch press for 10,000 parts. It's, you know, it's a whole process of taking something from a raw square rectangular billet and making it into a functional tool. So it's like a whole process, I think, is what makes it a lot different. And that's why I don't get burnout, is because I'm not always doing the same thing. Yes, I am doing the same thing overall, but every part of my day is different. I'm not just doing, like, I tried doing that with the house hammers. I tried doing 50 in a row, one step at a time, and I was like, okay, I can't do it this way, because it's just boring. It's like, then it becomes an assembly, and it's like, I'd rather know how many I can comfortably make in a day, and that's how many I make a day, and do it that way.
And you want to make more than a day.
Yeah. Otherwise it's so boring. Cause like, I don't want to just punch eyes for an entire day, for like an entire week or day or
Monday's whatever. Just making handles. Yeah. Tuesday's just punching eyes.
Yeah. No, can't do it that way. It's so boring that way.
Well, and as you're saying this, I'm realizing I did it that way when I had my embroidery business. I would embroider every fucking thing, hang it up to dry after washing, and then every step I did, like, en masse. So, yeah, I was sanding all the hoops and then doing all the gluing. It's just, like, all the cutting after the gluing. That probably is part of why I hated it, honestly, because it's sometimes I would just feel like, I'm going to be here for 3 to 4 hours just doing this thing that I hate because I saved it all up to do it together. Yeah.
See, and I think that's the important part, is it sucks all of the passion out of it. Like, it takes all of the, like, at the end of the day, I have finished products that I get to look at, and that started as just blank billets this morning. And like, if I'm just punching eyes, it's like, cool. I just spent an entire day to look at a bunch of freaking unfinished products. It's like, I like to go through the full product process, and at the end of the day, I have a finished product that I can actually hold in my hands and be like, okay, I was productive today. Because otherwise, I don't feel like I'm productive enough. Even though I probably am, but I don't feel it. It takes the passion out of it.
Trying to do it all at once just makes it a chore. It's like... Yep. Walking around the house and tidying up as you go throughout the day, compared to just leaving the house get a mess and having to clean the whole thing in one go. Like, you don't want to do it.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly how I do it, though.
Shop is like a hurricane
went through, and then it's like, from all one day, I'll like destroy my back and hands sweeping.
In saying that, I do get a really big buzz out of cleaning my shop for a whole day and seeing the finished product.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's another satisfaction in itself.
Yeah.
So I have sort of a related question as far as growth. How or when do you give yourself permission to upgrade your tools? How do you know it's time that it's a good investment?
It's always time. It's literally, it's literally always time. If you're not upgrading, if you're not taking that next step, you're not going to grow. Like, I don't believe in staying stagnant, because I think that's how you become content with your situation. And I don't want to ever be content with where I'm at. I always want to strive for more. So, and I think that's important to be, I don't know. It depends per person. I guess it depends on how successful you want to be. Like, if you want to be, if you want to be at the top, then you have to always be growing. You always upgrade. Like, I'm not afraid to take out a loan to upgrade equipment if it's going to get me to that next step, to where I need to be. Because it's never a bad idea to invest in yourself and to invest in something that you are ultimately, you know, you're going to turn into something big. It's never a bad idea.
Now, have you regretted any purchases you've made?
I wouldn't. I mean, small stuff in the beginning, like that I thought would work. I regret buying things that I thought would work on a whim and they didn't. But as far as like major equipment, I don't regret a single one. They all got me to where I am now. They all taught me something. I guess I would have taken different steps, I guess, on some of the purchases, but in all hindsight, like it all got me to where I am. It knew what I didn't want and what I do. It taught me what I wanted out of my equipment and what I wanted out of, I guess, what I needed to be as productive as I can be. Like it taught me what I need as far as equipment requirements, I guess.
Is there any tools you have that you think you don't need the expensive versions of? Like how Jimmy DiResta has 15 cheap grinders as opposed to one good expensive one.
Oh, you can't beat an expensive grinder. I mean, it depends. I mean, you don't need to go like straight top notch, you know, full, get all the bells and whistles, attachments and stuff. But like a nice 2x72, like any of the reputable brands, like they're going to be a nice, it's going to be the one thing you need. Like they're all pretty good. They're all good. So if any of them have the three phase motor and the VFD, then it's a good machine. Like usually I can't speak for like V-Vors and stuff, but
well, that's okay. Cause they don't have a, 2x72. They have a 2x80 because apparently Yeah, which you can get like any belt size you want. You could custom order belt sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a 182 sander for sale near me, which obviously the longer the belt is, the longer they last, the more they keep the heat down.
It's really
like,
longevity and heat dispersion is really all you get.
Right. That's why like a 1x30 isn't great. Because it just doesn't have the. But for my shop, a 1x30 would probably be okay for what I do 90% of the time. Because I also have a 4x36, right? Like,
yeah, it really depends on the application you're using it in. Like, as far as.
But I'd like a 2x72, Brian, if you'd like.
Like,
if you're
that tsunami he made, man, that Brian made is going to be crazy.
I don't think I've seen it yet.
I'm trying to get my hands on one of those. It's a 3x79. So it's got 3-inch wide belt, which would be perfect because there's a lot of time where 2-inch wide belts aren't wide enough for a hammer. Yeah. Especially like if you're making flatters or something, like those are usually like 2 to 3 inch square. So, or round, whatever. But yeah, those are big faces. So it'd be nice to have a belt that can do the entire face.
Yeah. So.
So for everyone else that has no idea what you two just talked about,
they were talking.
All I heard was a lot of numbers.
A planisher is what you would call it.
Linisher.
A grinder.
A linisher.
It's a grinder. It's a belt grinder.
So He's an Australian, and they have a different word for things. Sometimes.
When I said grinder, I meant like a disc grinder.
Yeah.
And then you start talking about
like an angle grinder. He was talking about an angle grinder.
Oh, you're talking about, okay.
Right, so like a lot of people, I know people who like make roll cages for race cars, and they buy the Harbor Freight Princess Auto grinder, and they buy five of them, and they just constantly return them and get new ones.
Oh,
right.
I mean,
because it's not worth the difference between the $15 one and the $100 grinder isn't worth it for a lot of people. Yeah. But so then if you're thinking about like your shop, is there anything that you went, I'm glad I didn't buy the more expensive thing?
Yeah, that conversation wasn't meant to be about grinders.
No. There's not a single thing that I would buy. I believe in buying quality tools, like quality name tools.
Right.
Because otherwise...
Stuff like tongs and stuff?
I guess tongs... No, because my most used tongs are handmade by makers. So I can't say that I agree. I mean, I have... Economy tongs, per se. Economy tongs, like the Blacksmith Depot ones, but I never use them. They sit on the rack, just because they have no application in what I do. Like, they're too small for most of the stuff I do.
Right.
If I were to get the tooling, they might get more use, but...
Yeah, and I think, like, so basically, once you get into production, if you really want to get production and produce... I think quality is 100% the way you need to go. And I think if you want to do, like, a lot of makers just want to make whatever they want to make that day. Well, then you can have a tool that's cheap because you're going to use it once.
Yeah.
Or twice.
Yeah.
But if you're in production, I think I 100% agree. You're going the best quality that
you have a certain tool brand.
Yeah. Well, like that, like today I posted a story. I used a heat gun for the second time in the day, and it was like smoking like crazy. Like the heat gun, like after I unplugged it and stuff, it's just like got smoke rolling out of it. I was like, all right, that seems right.
Right. Yellow.
And it was just a cheap one from the hardware store. Yeah. Yeah. It's just a cheap one from the hardware store. So I'm like, all right, maybe I should have bought a better heat gun, I guess. It was yellow.
Yeah, I don't know why. I knew it was yellow. I just did. I haven't seen the screen.
My heat gun costs $15 brand new from Bunnings.
Yeah, that's how much
mine had an issue with it.
That's how much mine was. I've only used it twice. And all I used it for was to take labels off a box so I could reuse it to ship it.
Right. So I had a cheap one and it did that. I bought the really expensive DeWalt one and it's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. Keith messaged me and was like, hey, there's this one that I use and it's super good, but it's like $300. I was like, ooh, I don't need a heat gun that bad.
I didn't go 300, but mine has like different settings and stuff and high heat. And,
yeah.
Which yeah, is I was much like, man.
So, yeah. The one I have has low and high. That's it. Just turn it on.
All right. But you know what I also appreciate is our Patreon supporters. Yeah. Especially our F Clamp level ones, Scott from Dad It Yourself DIY, Joe Herdina, Rich from Lowen Designs, David Wood from DW Wood Builds, Brad from I'm Gonna Make, Chad from Chad's Custom Creations, and as well as everyone else. This week with Ryan here, we're gonna announce something fun. So Ryan, he does a giveaway on his Patreon. And included now, starting now, going forward, is that every one of our patrons is going to get an entry into Ryan's giveaway. It's something that Ryan does with a couple other podcasts. I think he does it on Work For It and Working Hands, Makeshift. Anyone else?
Yep. Nope. That's it. And then you got
it. All right. And then now us. So if you... you just get automatically entered. It's just, boom, you're going to be entered. If you don't want the hammer... I'll take it. You know, if or whatever. You don't always do a hammer. I think
last month someone paid it forward. So I'm only going to do hammers now. Like I tinkered with the idea of doing anvils and axes too, but I'm just a hammer guy. I'm going to stick with what I know.
Right. Hey, I know how to get hammered. But so with that fun thing as well, you can also get access to our after show where we have to talk about interesting or secret stuff. You can also get access to, you also get a keychain, numbered keychain, because I believe in numbering things. You get a numbered keychain made by me. So everyone who signs up on Patreon can get that, because I don't make enough of these leather keychains to actually get.
So if you were making 20 a day, you probably would get over it.
Yeah, I'd get over it. I get over it already because sometimes I number them wrong. And then I go to look at the list and I go, fuck. So anyways, go to patreon.com/clamp and, we would appreciate your support there. You can also get, merch if you'd like to support us. If you're watching, you can see I've got a Clamp podcast shirt on. You can get that at our website, clampcast.com. And now let's go to Clampmendations. I watched the Doctor Who special. If you like Doctor Who like I do, and you kind of fell off because David Tennant was your favorite Doctor Who person and Matt Smith was okay, and then you kind of lost it after that, guess what? He's back. And he was back for a special, a 3-episode arc with David Tennant, and Neil Patrick Harris is also
in. I was going to say, it was NPH was in.
Yeah. Which was really cool. And definitely go if you're a Doctor Who fan and you've fallen off the wagon for a little bit, it's a good time to jump back in and see the new and exciting things that are happening on Doctor Who.
That reminds me, I need to jump back in because the exact same thing. Yeah. Matt Smith is okay, but he's not Christopher Eccleston or David Tennant. So I need to get back into it.
Right. And I would like to watch the other episodes. I'm not against the people. I want to be clear on that. I just lost interest somehow.
Yeah. Mine this week, I am deviating very quickly and not doing Instructables this week just because my brain is fried already from being back at work. So instead, I'm going to recommend the Sam Smith Tiny Desk Concert. If y'all don't know it, there's a series of concerts in the NPR offices, and it's called Tiny Desk Concert, and a lot of really good ones are out there. But I think that maybe Sam Smith has taken the top. He has a choir backing him, and it's one of the most beautiful arrangements I've ever heard. Like, these people are angels. It's amazing. So, if you need good music that lasts about 20 minutes, I would say check it out because it's beautiful in every way.
Cool. Adam?
My recommendation this week is going to be a GTA RP person called Spaceboy. His YouTube channel is Spaceboy Clips, and he plays a character called James Randall, who's 82 years old and just fucks with everyone. It's so funny because, like, the cops will go to pull him over, and he's just like, yes, hello, like, and acts, like, so senile, like, he has no idea what's going on. It is one of the funniest RP characters I've ever seen. It's just, the shit he gets into is just hilarious, and he plays the character so well.
Cool. I'm going to have to look at this. I love Grand Theft Auto roleplay. Right. It is so funny. I don't enjoy
just his reels.
Like, playing it at all. Yeah, but it's just like, the people are wonderful and weird.
Yeah. Just watch the James Randall reels, and you'll get hooked into watching the full-length videos. Like, they're so hilarious.
Cool. Well, Ryan, what do you got for us? What should we check out?
I'm going to say you should check out my buddy Glenn is Howling Wind Axe and Tool. And purely because I love his content. It's fantastic. Like, his whole personality is fantastic. We talk a lot. And he's actually sending me a meat grinder. Like, this old, he and his wife, they try to homestead as much as they can. And they found this old meat grinder. So they're going to send it to me so I can use my big tumbler to clean it up for him, because it's, like, super old and needs a cleanup. And but he sent me this message asking me this, and he was like, man, it'd be super cool, I'd appreciate it, and to sign up. He was like, all right, man, I'll talk to you later. Smooches. And then I laughed so hard. And I was like, God, Glenn is such a great guy. And so I think everyone should go check him out. Instagram, Howling Winds Axe and Tool. And then his wife's also an author, and she writes some good book. My wife read her book and loved it. So, cool. Like, they got kind of a cool little thing going in their little homestead lifestyle.
Nice. Well, definitely go check that out. If you want a link to that, they'll be in the show notes, which you can find on your podcast app. But now we're going to go into Jesse's section, Ask Us Anything.
Ask Us Anything. The Ask Us Anything question for this week comes from Overall Makerworks. Where do you get your inspiration? Museums, Pinterest, Instagram feed, craft shows, IKEA?
Yeah. Well, I can go first. I definitely, IKEA surprisingly has a lot of inspiration. If you look at it and go, I'd really like that, but I'd like to make it good. And you can get a lot of inspiration from that. But I like to go everywhere and look, and I like to I'm constantly looking at sets and backgrounds on TV shows and movies. Like I'm missing what's going on. Cause I'm like, oh, that's a cool piece of furniture. And I remember like this 1940s chair that I'm currently sitting on was in an episode of a TV show. And I made my wife like rewatch it. Cause it was like a 3 seconds of a shot. And I was like, is that the same chair? Is that my office chair? And I was like rewinding it. And she's like, I don't care. Can we get on with this? And I was like, no, but it's like cool that the chair I'm in. Anyways. So I get inspiration from everything. And I think it's like, you need to be on like receive mode constantly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. I feel kind of the same way. I don't really like search for inspiration, but I just, if I'm trying to think of something to come up with for an idea or whatever, I just have so much like stored memories of things that I've seen either in videos or on TV or whatever, but I don't go looking for it.
See, I used to. Like, I used to spend a lot of time looking for it when content creation was my job. It's like I spent so much time on Pinterest just sort of seeing what was popular and what people were thinking about, what they were talking about. But now it's just probably, honestly, Instagram and TikTok, just because I don't have Pinterest on my phone. So there you go. Yeah, probably just those.
So what hammer feeds do you look at? A Hammer Weekly? The Hammer Weekly magazine?
No, I wish. I wish that was the thing. Like, dude, I've tried so hard to find, like, books on hammers and stuff, and they're not good. Like, most of the ones you'd come across on Google and stuff. I did find this old, in an antique shop, I found this super old, like, tool catalog, and it had a whole blacksmithing section, so it did have a bunch of different style hammers and stuff. So that was cool, but mostly I don't really look for anything. I mean, there are certain hammer makers I follow, but I don't really. Well, I think we all have different styles, so I don't really look for. I don't know. I try not to tread on anyone's style too much, so I don't know. I just kind of try weird, funky things. Like, I have my own. I have, like, tons of weird hammer ideas, so I just, like, we'll think of a concept and just kind of try it. I'll just figure out how to implement it.
But where did that weird, funky idea come from?
It just sparked, man. I'm just a weird, funky guy, so I got weird, funky ideas.
Fair. All right. I think it's all the mushrooms. Yeah. Are you still making mushrooms?
No, dude. I only did that one time, and like, that's all Keith talks about.
Well, you had a bunch of, I swear you had a bunch of mushrooms on your website.
Yeah, I did make, I only had one. I made the one for the very first time I did Maker Swap. I did that.
Okay.
I did a Damascus hammer, and then I did a mushroom to go with it, like a little sculpture. And then I did, and that was like a realistic looking one. And then I did start a bunch for like a gate project, but it felt like the person fell through. So they're all sitting in a scrap bin somewhere.
Fair. I think maybe that's what I saw. I swear you made a bunch of mushrooms. Maybe it just happened to be
there. Yeah, that's probably what it is. Yeah, maybe that's probably what it was.
Is you posting about it or whatever. But okay. So apparently not mushrooms. Not being on mushrooms or making mushrooms gives you inspiration. All right. Anyways, well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Instagram, and you can find me on Facebook, but mostly, actually, you can find me on TikTok and stuff too. But Instagram is where I do all my business and where I pretty much focus my time. GnomeHammerForge.org. If you really want, there's nothing to do there. There's no products for sale or anything. I mean, there's merch. So I guess if you want to buy merch, you can buy merch. I think someone's here and I don't like it, but I think someone just showed up here, which is weird because I'm at the office, which no one should ever be showing up here at 10 at night. So
do you want to go check that out? We can wrap this up real quick.
I don't care. The door's locked. What are they going to do?
So I had a quick look at your website, and in saying that, how do people buy a hammer? Because I didn't see any way.
I do not sell one-off hammers anymore. I'm doing only production work now, so I'm focusing all on that. So you can't actually buy a hammer directly from me. You can get one. Maritime Knife Supply is going to have my hammers. And then I'm doing all of the house-made hammers. That's pretty much going to take up most of my time. So it's not cost-effective. Like, I make much more money doing the production work than doing the one-offs.
Yeah.
So
if someone
it didn't make sense to split my time.
Was it house-made and maritime?
Yep. Which house-made, it's just going to be whatever designs we come up with. I'm just... Brian does the designs, and I do all the forging. Like, I do all the manufacturing of them. And then, so they're kind of a collab piece. But the maritime ones are my design hammers that I put up there. Okay. And I'm open to more production work. So if anyone that listens.
If you want your own numbered collection. Kind
of, like, blacksmithing supply that they want to start, you know, I can make hammers work.
Uh-oh. Looks like I just lost my internet.
Oh, no.
I was going to say, did Grant freeze? Because he looked frozen. I was like, he's been in the same position like the entire thing that I've been saying, so I'm pretty sure he's not moving.
I was waiting with bated breath for him to come in and save us.
Way to go, host. I'm the host.
He said his internet just died. Okay, well, I'm going to close it out then. Am I? I don't remember the outro. I want to thank TF Turning for the theme music. Everyone go and follow and give him a share.
Instead of my frozen. You're gone.
Yeah, you were frozen.
No, I put the wrong door, but whatever.
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff. I don't know how to do an outro. It's been a long time since I did a host of this episode of this show.
Grant, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. So, funny story. I don't know if you know this, Jesse, but before you came on, probably 100 episodes before that. Oh, he's back.
Oh, there he is.
We used to swap each week who was the host.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we got to a point where it was like, no, Grant's the best. We'll just get Grant to do it every week. So, Grant, give us an outro because I just failed miserably.
I thought it was pretty good.
This is all staying in, by the way.